Good morning and welcome to the March 4, 2024 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everybody for attending, participating, and remind you to sign any of your electronic devices. For the online, please mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session. We have a very light agenda today. Told Brett that we're going to have to use him. Kirk's going to have to invite him to do our agendas more often. Brett.
I'm not sure how to take that.
Be a warning that I was going to do that. But I expect we'll complete the entire study and business session this morning. Hopefully the executive session as well. There will be a 45-minute executive session after the public meeting today. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask additional questions related to matters not on the agenda, please raise your hand, signaling that you wish to speak. When recognized, please come up to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today, we have all five commissioners present. We have Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Daniel Apple, and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board. So please join me in welcoming Annabelle Baps as she leads the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety.
So I am Annabelle Baps, one of the newest members to the safety team.
If you feel more comfortable, you're welcome to sit down.
All right, so I'm kind of filling in, so I didn't prepare any slides for advice, but the topic I'm going to discuss today is a little bit about protective eye warning. As we are starting to do spring cleaning, we're out in the yards quite a bit. And this is a subject that is always been a big topic in our house. My dad was involved in an accident when he was 12 that left him blind in one eye. So we have always put a big emphasis on making sure that your eyes are protected in every way possible with everything that you're going to be exposed to. I didn't really notice my dad having any disability because of that until I was about 15 years old and he was teaching me how to drive. Apparently, somebody with one eye compared to two eyes is a significant difference, according to my mom, who was also terrified of getting a car after my dad had taught me how to drive. So as we're cleaning up our yards and moving things in the houses, it's just a reminder to make sure that as we're getting ready to mow the yard, we're checking for rocks and things that the snow left behind. We're my favorite hedger, as I use that with cleaning up my yard and my bushes, that I make sure nothing looks up into my eyes or into my children's eyes that are out in the yard with me, things like that. We just had a great safety video that talked about ladders as we clean our gutters out and things like that. Just and make sure that we're using them properly to ensure our safety. I also learned with this topic and presenting it that our warehouse has safety goggles and safety protective eyewear available for its employees, not only to use for work, but also at home purposes to make sure that we're practicing that both here and at home. Just my little reminder for today.
It took me way back. When I was a kid, my brother lost an eye in a yard accident, and so it can happen. It does have an impact.
Yeah, and my dad actually got hit in the eye. It was directly below by a wire, and so you know, even been helpful to have some protection.
I really like that all of the safety minutes bring information that we can apply outside of work, you know, in our daily lives. So, thank you.
Any other questions for me?
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
How long have you been in the district?
About 2 whole months now. Yeah.
Well, it can be like fire.
Might as well, right?
And where'd you come from?
So I worked for Tulane County District Court for the last 12 years, either that in management. So I'm really taking a new career choice. Yeah, it's been a great experience. I'm very happy with that.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay, Commissioners, management is not recommending moving any resolutions to the consent agenda. For the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to the regular agenda upon the request of any commissioner. Do I hear any requests for additions to the agenda? Agenda stands. Okay, Kurt, let's move on to number three.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. As Jared comes up, agenda item number three is an annual report of safety concerns received. And if it seems like we were talking about this not long ago, we were talking about it not long ago. But this is part of our commitment from the Eddie Bromley accident is to come back and report to the board on an annual basis on how we're doing with safety concerns. And so Jared is here, and we're trying to get back on the cycle early in the year rather than late in the year like we were last year. Looks like we're having a few technical difficulties here. There we go. Welcome, Jared.
Thank you very much. Well, I am excited to be here. So this was last, I think we did this in June, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we've had in just how we are able to have transparency and insight into the system that manages this, manages our safety concerns. So I think just some relevant background information for all of us to be aware of. Oh, and sorry, Jared Watts, Director of Safety Health and HMOB. So I apologize, I'm jumping right in. Thank you for having me here this morning to share this with you. Some relevant background information around safety concerns. So safety concerns are brought up in a number of different ways. As I spent time at rollout meetings with crews, spent time in safety meetings, spent time in safety committees, and just watch conversations between employees and supervisors, this is where the vast majority of our safety concerns are brought up and actually addressed at the same time. So there's not necessarily like this, list that just is always, hey, you brought this up, I'm putting this in the system, we're creating a corrective action. But what we do have is Enablon. Enablon is our safety management system that we use to manage the safety data. So this is where like an actual event or close call, injury, property damage, or safety concern would live with inside of a database. The information that I'll present to you today is simply pulling from the records that are in Enablon. The reason I wanted to provide this context is whenever we look at data, there's all the stuff you can see, and then all the stuff you can't see. And this is just simply a window into what was actually entered into what they want. So you'll see here we have a trend. We're able to pull this data from Enablon and look back. And so what we see is that there was this giant spike in 2022 of 145 safety concerns that were entered into Enablon. And that's dropped down to 74 for 2023 that we had entered into Enablon. Most of these are entered by employees into the system. But there's also the way that our system works is it's a little bit cumbersome to get into and to enter one in. So often what an employee will do is grab one of my safety core data and say, hey, I've got a safety concern. I'd like this to be put in and I'd like a corrective action or a system improvement to be developed around this. So actually, before I skip forward on this one of the things that I think is important context to this, and this talks to a little bit about the delay that we had last year for me coming in to try to find this stuff, is what I found is we had entered these things into Enablon, but the right kind of access, the right kind of transparency for my, the people that reported to me, the safety coordinators, was was extremely limited. And so one may go in and they may modify it or push it through corrective action, and then they lost access to even see it. If they wanted to see it, they had to pull it into Excel, then manage all the data in Excel, then make a change. And then even if they tried to make a change, I was the only one that could actually make that change to the system. So a big part of our energy and efforts in 2023 was around getting the right kind of access and the right kind of training and education for people that, manages the safety team that manages this. And then taking the, 145 and actually closing them out in the system, chasing down where were our corrective actions put in place. Because that's the really important thing, is that when we have something brought up, it's either addressed or it's communicated as to why we're not going to address it. So coming from there, we have these corrective actions that we also have in Enable One. So from those 74 that were put in 2023, 64 corrective actions were generated, 31 of which were completed, and 33 of which are still in progress to be completed. And they're in various stages because they may be for various reasons. Like a safety concern may require, it's a big effort, an energy and effort, it may require multiple departments. Or it's just, it took a long time to get it through that process, or it was put in at the end of the year, and so it's still working. So a couple key takeaways that I have for everyone in this is there was this huge emphasis, like I said, in 2023, to improve my team's usage of Enable. This was through training. This was even through data transparency. So creating dashboards inside of Enable One, so my coordinators could go in and see, here's the new one that came in. They didn't have to just dig and dig and dig and dig. Trying to create it as part of one of our rituals of management. So it's something that we look at on a regular basis and not something that we look at once a year when we got to generate a report. And then I want to talk about some of the focus for 2024 around the Enable One. So this would be to improve transparency for all of this, so that we had a window for people to see, hey, this is the concern I put in. Did it actually make it in there? And then what's being done about it? And providing that window or that transparency for our employees. And then really trying to double down and refocus on how do we improve the process, so that the process of managing data in Enable One actually meets the purpose. The purpose behind the safety concern is I recognize something, I think it needs to be changed. And then when we meet that purpose, is that change is either communicated as to why we're doing it, why we're not doing it, but then we close that gap so that we build that, essentially kind of that capacity. We take care of that concern. So, any questions for me on this?
I do have a couple. Mm-hmm. So is there a threshold in which the safety concerns or incidences are reported? Are these, I'm getting at is, so all L&I claims more than likely are in this database?
They are not represented in these numbers.
Okay.
So those could be counted. A safety concern would just be, hey, I noticed there's a potential tripping hazard. When it comes to the injuries or illnesses and the corrective actions that are driven from those, they are not living in the data that I just presented. They're separate. We have that data, but they're separate.
And then as you are highlighting the trend, is it that we become super focused in one year and then lax off another? Is that what you're trying to demonstrate? So the goal might be to have more consistency on everybody being aware.
Yeah. So I think that's the heart of it is, when we looked at like even the 2022 data and really kind of sliced it, you could see some areas threw in like 40, and it was just like 40 all at once. And then other areas they didn't have any entered in, but then when you look at it, they're having these conversations and they're taking care of them on the fly. They're getting those things done and they're addressing those safety concerns. The challenge with it is what, you know, the best practice for us is that if I have a safety concern, best thing for me to do is I go talk to my supervisor, say, hey, I've got a concern with this, and then that is addressed. And we get a small fraction of that actually makes it into this Enable system.
So are you wanting more feedback?
From employees?
Yes.
100%. Yes, we want that. I mean, one of the biggest principles around H&OP is we get that feedback, right? Is that when things don't look like or look right, smell right, feel right, we need to stop and communicate and seek that feedback. and so that we can right-size that.
You could see how if it's intermittent in the feedback, yeah, and then all of a sudden everybody buys in and now we're up to 500. It's like, whoa,
yeah.
What happened?
And one of the things that really, like, you know, Enablon is not something that like Rhett's team would be using to manage correct or manage how they do work. And so trying to get those two systems to combine and speak to each other so that we have better insight into how much are we actually will be one of the focuses we have in 2024. So it doesn't become this system outside of what we're already doing that in and of itself doesn't actually get us closer to getting it done. It's just a simple way of tracking it. Trying to get those two to combine so that we have better insight into where we actually spend our energy.
Thank you.
Sure. You elaborated on the processes and the input, and you identify a concern. So it goes through the process, mm-hmm, and you talk about once it goes through that process, and then you implement the result, I guess. What's the timeline behind that? Sometimes processes just take forever to get through and actually get to the end result, which is what we're trying to accomplish. And so my concern is that, you know, the process is streamlined and that it gets you to the end result as quickly as possible. I hope that the training and all those kinds of things is it quicker than so.
Yeah, and that, you know, when you think about some of these may take longer, they may take longer just because they're really big. And then other ones that are really easy don't take as long. But your point, I think, is what we our focus of our group is to really streamline that process.
Yeah.
So that even if it is something that is going to take an inordinate amount of effort, we have insight into what it is, and then we're working towards that. And we're able to show these are the things that we're doing done to get, you know, the remediation of whatever issue was brought up.
Yeah, I think the focus should be on result.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Okay.
Commissioners, any other comments or questions? Carney, thanks for flagging me down. I kind of can't see you.
That's pretty common.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. So Kirk, we're at the unbelievable point of our agenda that we're asking for public comment. Do we have any public here that would like to address the commission? All right. Hearing none, we'll move on with our business session. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. A motion to accept the consent agenda. Such a motion. Second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, we'll move into the regular agenda, Kirk.
Okay. Agenda item 7, I'll invite Cody Gillen up. This is a resolution declaring Environmental Systems Research Institute Incorporated of San Bernardino, California as the sole source supplier of ArcGIS software suite. Welcome, Cody.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me today. So the district has been using ESD to supply its GIS software for the foundation for all of the GIS work that Shoyin PV does for couple of decades. This includes modeling of the customer utilities, so distribution, transmission, water, wastewater, fiber, as well as the reference data sets, stuff associated with parks or county parcels or things that we bring in to help people do their work. Since 2009, ESRI is the vendor that supplies this software. They moved to term licensing. It's a 3-year period of time. So we've done 5 of them, I guess. I haven't been around that long. I've been here for 4 years. And we want to renew the terms of that enterprise agreement for another 3 years. Two of the components of that enterprise agreement are the same thing that we've been doing since the last one in previous iterations. That's the base platform and some additional licensing that allows us to integrate with other technologies and other systems. And then there is one additional one, Geo Event Server Licensing. That's an add-on this year. The impetus for that is really coming from the new electric meters, the AMI meters. They supply dynamic data, and there's appetite for displaying all the information that can come from It can come from those electric meters in a map interface so that people can access it. And it's partially just to access the information as it's coming in real time, but it also has a nexus with planning and system engineering. So if someone who is planning for line extensions or additional customers off of a transformer wants to know, can that transformer, for example, supply the additional load, they could look back at the last week or 2 weeks or a month or some interval of time and know, yes, I can support this line extension or additional customer load, or no, we have to plan differently. Esri is sort of the industry standard for software GIS platform around the world, really, and the district has been utilizing it for a long time very successfully. And we have some extensions that are built on top of it as well. Any questions about that?
I have a comment. I appreciate, I believe I read that they are domestic, they're the sole domestic provider.
Yes.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that.
Yeah, they're fixed in Redlands.
Where is that software reside?
We have it on premises, so we maintain a network of servers that do all the work. There is a small slice of it that's also sort of on the cloud, but it's not exactly like software as a service. It really resides on premise.
What's your question? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioners. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Cody. Okay, I'd like to invite Devin Myers up. Devin is going to cover resolutions 8, 9, and 10. We're going to try something a little bit different because these are all design build contracts with moving parts and amendments to them. And so what I thought I'd do is just discuss resolution number 8 being one with North Bank Civil and Marine. It's for the Powerhouse 2 draft, 2 gate and hydraulic power unit upgrade project. Resolution 9 is with Olson Industrial. It's for the Powerhouse 2 generator lead replacement contract. And resolution 10 is with also with Olson Industrial Powerhouse 2 motor control centers replacement project. And two of these we're asking in the resolutions for additional delegated authority for the general manager, as long as within the approved budgets that the board has set on an annual basis. These design build contracts have a lot of moving parts and we're coming back in regular intervals. And so we're looking for ways to keep the projects moving and look for efficiency at the same time. And so Devin is going to run through all three of these at the same time. If you have any concerns with doing that whatsoever, just let us know and we can go through individually. Take it away, Devin.
Okay, thanks, Kirk. As Kirk said, my name is Devin Myers. I'm a project manager involved in the Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation program. The district is using a progressive design build method to procure equipment, engineering, and construction services for various balance of plant projects, as well as the Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation program or project. We began exploring alternative project delivery methods in 2018 in anticipation of the Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation program and have noted several significant advantages. This project delivery method is becoming routine to the district, particularly with the projects Kirk's talking about down there at Powerhouse 2. We have included a provision in two of these resolutions to authorize the general manager to adjust contract cost as a project-specific exception to Resolution 17-14215. I'm here today to present three resolutions for your consideration. The first resolution is for contract 2014. This is a refurbishment of the draft tube gate system at Powerhouse 2. This resolution includes a request to ratify 5 executed field work orders, authorize final acceptance for work performed under 2 of the guaranteed maximum price amendments, execute a guaranteed maximum price amendment for the installation of the draft tube gate system on the 5th and 6th units of Powerhouse 2, and increase limit to the delegation of authority. The current estimate at completion for this project is $15.2 million, as it's scheduled to be completed in fall of 2025. The second resolution is for contract 2018, which is the replacement of the generator main leads at Powerhouse 2. This resolution is to ratify 2 executed field work orders, execute a guaranteed maximum price amendment for the replacement of the main leads on the 5 remaining units at Powerhouse 2. And the current estimate at completion for this project is $6.2 million and is also scheduled to be completed in fall of 2025. The third resolution is for contract 2044, the replacement of the unit motor control centers at Powerhouse 2. This resolution includes a request to ratify 2 executed field work orders and a GMP amendment for the installation of MCC equipment for unit U5 at Powerhouse 2, and increase the limit to the delegation of authority. The current estimate at completion for this project is $8.3 million and is scheduled to be completed in conjunction with the Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation project. As mentioned earlier, 2 of the resolutions include a section authorizing the general manager to adjust contract costs via field work orders and GMP amendments before approval by the commission when the cumulative values of the field work orders and GMPs is less than the approved project capital budget. This is a project-specific exception to the limits stated in Resolution 17-14215. Utilizing delegation of authority up to the approved capital project budget for projects 2014 and 2044 is considered a reasonable approach to increase the staff efficiency given the nature of these projects. This approach should ensure careful and effective completion of the work while keeping the board informed of any significant changes impacting project costs. Additionally, the board will be promptly notified if any unexpected events arise in relationship to these projects or upon request from the board or the senior. And I know that was a lot, but are there any questions regarding any of those?
Sort of an aside question. You made a comment early on in your presentation that the approach we're taking with the GMP has become somewhat routine. Would you, no preference to go back to the old system or not?
Well, I sure like it. I mean, I think some of the things, you know, I have some listed things that I had here. You know, some of the things that I appreciate about it is that you're not going into a contract handing the bidders a specification saying, build this for us. You go and say, here's some draft specifications, here's what we think we want. You guys are the experts, tell us what we don't know, and then we can negotiate all that before we start building these GMP amendments. And so I think it has an opportunity to give us a better product in the long run.
Yeah. So that's what we've heard. It's good to hear.
Yeah, and it's another thing that's been interesting to me, which I appreciate, is that you kind of go into them with, you know, everybody's nervous, we've not really done this before, here's where our price is, you know, we think it's going to cost this much, and after we've done one or two of them, we start realizing, well, efficiency gains by doing the work, and yeah, I think we can do it cheaper than that. So, you know, or like on 2014, the draft tube gate, I think we came in here a year or so ago with about a $17.5 million forecast for the whole project, and now we're down around 15 million with, you know, just a couple more units to bring through here. So we're seeing those advantages, I think.
Seems like that was a good switch.
I think so, yeah.
You've got in here the delegation of authority, and so normally we have a different approach on that. And so what kind of time do you save in having that delegation to the manager? There must be an efficiency gain.
Yeah,
doing this. So are we talking time? What are we talking about?
Yeah, so I think we're talking time. So when we come to the board
we put together a GMP amendment, or if it's a large field work order, and then that goes through, you know, a bunch of internal team reviews, and then it goes to legal for reviews. A lot of those same reviews will happen for the actual GMP amendment. Here's what we're asking to do. Are we staying inside the lines? Are we doing what we're supposed to do? But it doesn't need, we wouldn't be developing a cover memo. We wouldn't be developing the actual resolution itself, which is another set of things that go around for reviews from the legal group and the PCS group. And a lot of, when we get into these design build projects, as we move forward, I mean, I could come to you 8 different times with basically a copy paste of the what we just did. You know, we're going to be doing another unit, same exact work we talked about 6 months ago. And then we went through this whole process to develop resolutions and cover memos and all that to bring to you. So I think that's kind of part of it. Kirk, I'll kind of turn it over to you.
Yeah, I think that's great. And all those things Devin said, I would reinforce. The other thing that we're trying to do is get our arms around, how many times do we approve the same thing over and over and over? And I think this is an illustration of, the board approves the annual budget, the capital budget for a project, and then we come back multiple times, even though it's within the annual capital project, for these different things, whether it's amendments or whether it's another release. And so we're approving essentially the same thing over and over multiple times, just going down in further detail. And I would say this is just one example. There's also these amendments that go, what Devin's talking about, there's an approval process for those at the same time, which won't necessarily change or gain efficiencies from that. But we're looking at every time in this workflow process, how many times are we approving, in essence, the same thing at different levels in the organization. And I'd say this is a good example of that.
What I'm hearing, it's not as much time as, but it's process, the paperwork, so to speak, the red tape, going through a project and having, you know, the best efficiency that we can gain internally in getting the work done. I don't see that there's a lot of time that's saved, because, you know, the board meets every 2 weeks anyway. So it's more or less process is what you're talking about.
I think it's a combination. To your point, it is probably more process. The time, though, is there's 2 weeks worth of work, not 2 weeks solid for preparing for an amendment to the board, but 2 weeks of time frame to actually get that approved. And so it is, I think, more of a, if you went down to the hours, you'd be saving, you know, a few hours. And then if you went down to the time frame to make a decision and move forward with the contractor, potentially a couple weeks.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
I will say too, the commitment you have for me is, should you choose to delegate that authority, is I think the art in this is making sure that, and this is what I will do, is make sure that, because some of these amendments, even though they're less than the approved budget, I keep a close eye on them, and Devin knows, you can ask him. I always ask when he comes to me, what's the latest forecast? Because sometimes an amendment, even though it's within the approved budget, might also look at increasing the budget if we approve that, because there's other tasks that are following. And so you have my commitment to keep an eye on that, and that we would use the process if it looks like it's going to kick over the budget, that we would come back to the board with a, so that you still have your eyes on the total project budget.
And for clarification, for these 3 work orders alone, it's not for a change in policy that we're making.
Yeah. It's actually just 2 of them. Yeah, that's okay. 8 and 10. Yeah.
Commissioners, anything else? Thank you, Devin.
All right, thank you.
Ready for 11? Or do you want to take 11 separate?
Do we want?
You might want to take 11 separate. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's, commissioners, do I have 7, 8, and 10?
I'll second.
Any discussion? All those in favor of resolution 7, 8, and 10, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Spinning. Motion passes. Okay, let's move into
Okay. Agenda item number 11 is a resolution confirming the district's willingness to maintain compliance with terms of grants awarded to Pashaston Water District by the United States Department of Agriculture Rural Utility Services. And with us is Acting General Counsel Daniel Apple.
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, Commissioner. That's better. Well, thank you for having me. I'm here to talk briefly about the Pashaston Water District and some grant funding that they took back in 2003 and 2004. It's our understanding that this money was used for various improvements to the system, both distribution assets, a reservoir, and a pump station, among others. And as part of the transaction, as you know, the district is going to be acquiring the assets of the Pashaston Water District, which will include these assets. Those will become part of the district's system, and the USDA, the Rural Utilities Service, has requested a resolution from this board simply stating that we will abide by the terms of those grant agreements that Pashaston Water District entered into about 20 years ago in these cases. And so the resolution before you simply does that. It just says that the district will abide by the terms of these grant agreements for the remaining service life of the assets that are funded with those grant agreements. And so that's what the resolution does, nothing more. But I would be happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Daniel, can you explain item number 12 on the resolution? Can you go into a little detail on
that? Yeah. Well, this, and again, we're dealing with grant agreements that are 20 years old. They have changed quite a bit. At least some of the newer ones that I've seen do tend to speak in terms of service life. But what we have done here, you know, there is some language in the grant agreement that seems to contemplate that there could be a termination date, but it doesn't give you, you know, a date certain. And so what we tend to look at in these circumstances is service life of the assets. And so I've spoken with Ron Slaybaugh, our wastewater manager, and he has indicated that approximately for these kinds of items, which we do track on a regular basis, I understand through our accounting system, that something like a reservoir, maybe 60 years, something like distribution infrastructure, maybe 50 years, something like a pump station, maybe in the order of 25 years. So there, I mean, clearly these assets will at some point have completed their service and will no longer be functioning for what their intended purpose was. And at that point, the grant funding, in our view, would cease. And that's why we've written the resolution. And in fact, we've run this draft resolution by RUS, and they're fine with it as written. So the Rural Utility Service, the USDA.
So would they be willing, if they're fine with that, would they be willing to provide us something in writing stating that when the life of the asset reaches the end of life, that this agreement would terminate?
We could ask them for an amendment to that. It would be an amendment to the agreement. Since it was not something that we signed initially, I think that what we have in terms of this resolution essentially gives us the same thing, because that's all we're agreeing to, and they've indicated their agreement with it. But we could certainly inquire if the commission was of interest, whether they would provide something formally in writing.
Well, perhaps you shouldn't be written in such a way that it states that and they're okay with it. That's another way of skinning the cat.
Sure. And I think, I'm certainly happy to indicate anything. But right now, if you look at the agreement, it says that we will agree to do it during the service life of the assets funded under this agreement. And so we're agreeing to do it during that period, nothing more.
I've sat in the seat long enough to see wonky things happen in government.
Understood.
Where that's the understanding, but then the service life is breached, and then they want us to build something new. Gosh only knows what could be the case. That's where I have a little bit of angst, just in terms of trying to get clarity that we're not going to be responsible for replacing this at some future date.
Yeah, no, I don't think, given the fact that these are depreciating assets, and they provided you with a certain dollar value at the beginning, I feel I understand completely where you're going, and I like to have things clearer than not. That's my preference as well. I think that given the fact that there is a service life for these assets, and that's something that we can appeal to, that's more objective. It's not something that is, up to the eye of the beholder. That once that has been reached, there's really nothing left there.
Thank
Well, Daniel, I want to take a real low-level review of this whole thing, basically for the public and
Sure.
just for my understanding as well. If we agree to this, does it really change anything for us in the operation of that facility? I mean, does it really have any impact on us?
Probably in terms of day-to-day operations, I wouldn't think much.
Okay.
There are going to be some requirements in the grant agreements in terms of management systems and I mean things that you typically for this kind of an asset, talking about a water distribution system, you're going to be doing anyway.
And that
Maybe
might be paperwork,
paperwork.
report, yeah.
Paperwork reports, that kind of thing. In theory, the grantor, which is the USDA in this case, they could ask to come and see the system, make sure, verify that you're actually doing with it what you say you're doing with it, that sort of thing.
The alternate option is to then just not accept it and just pay that money back to the USDA. Would that be?
Yes, I think that would be the likely result is that the agreement would terminate for lack of compliance and the grant would be due. You have to pay it back.
And the third choice is if we don't accept it and we're not willing to pay it back, then the deal is off. The deal's dead. So that's kind of ballpark. Is that an accurate
I think that
pre-choice review?
given the current status, I'd have to double check the dates in the current agreement that we have with the Shasta Water District, but I believe we are still within the due diligence period.
I think just to add something, I think they would, in that third scenario, though, Peshastin Water District would still have an option. If they wanted to go forward with the transaction, they could make the payment. If our board did not accept the requirements of the grant, they can make the fair market value payment. Is
I
that?
assuming they had the resources
Yeah,
to
that
do
could be
that,
another
yeah.
nuance of one of the options, potentially.
But in reality, we're going to take care of the assets anyway.
Correct.
We might have a report to fill out. I'm not going to be paying money. So it's a pretty easy thing to comply with.
Yeah, yes, it's just something that, as you mentioned, we'll have to have the systems in place to understand that there are grant terms that could be applicable to these assets. So that's just something to be considered as we're going through the management process. But yes.
President, I would move approval of resolution 11. Any further comments? Okay, just like you have one.
This UFDA kind of stuck up on us. It wasn't originally discovered in the original analysis. And it reminds me of another project that had something similar back several years ago, and that was the Aranda Park, where they had a similar type of issue that came up. As a matter of fact, I think that was probably one of the reasons back then that we chose not to go forward with the Aranda Park. And so I am asked, the question that I asked simply was, is there a way to mitigate this so that we would not find ourselves accepting a project that had a grant attached to it, when we previously turned down a project because it had a grant attached to it. Because to me, that seems inconsistent in terms of our strategy. So I just wanted to make sure that we got that out for the record, that was where I had a little bit of discomfort. Thank you.
Providing that historical.
I would concur with that concern that in my mind, and I look to staff to correct me if I'm incorrect, the Arondo Park encumbrance was ultimately shown to be in perpetuity. And that's the difference in my eyes, that you could never change the use of that property. And this one is different. So that's why I have a higher level of comfort with this one.
Anything else? Favor of resolution 11, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes. Commissioners, while we are still on Peshawston Water District and we are doing fairly well in time, how much time do we need for?
Approximately 45 minutes for executive session.
And then for manager items?
Probably 15 minutes.
Okay, so we're doing fine. I'd like to key up the where we are at in our thinking as a board, as a commission on the Adder discussion that we've had with the Peshawston Water District, and then key that up and see where we're at and what we need to do, and we need to make a decision on that at some point. So I'm asking for some guidance here. Anybody want to try to do a review of the where we've been on our discussions?
In all honesty, it's caught me flat. Put it.
I'll jump in unless you want to pull your microphone a little closer.
And I would ask for staff to correct me if I'm off on my thought here. I think going back to you're asking for historical, we look historically, this topic was originally brought up under a different board. We had two different directions than we do today. And at that time, the direction given by the board was to come up with a strategy and a plan that did not socialize costs across the county, so that others in the county didn't pay for this acquisition of the water district in Shasta. Staff came back to us with their recommendation. And this happened recently with under the current board. And the recommendation included an adder of $1.3 million for the development of a new well. The new well was, not a big pun, well known in advance of the acquisition. So this was disclosed, everyone was aware of it. The staff came back and with a recommendation that $1.3 million would be created in the form of an adder and distributed throughout the Shasta Water District customers. The board has looked at that again and stepped back and is now deciding what to do with the adder. Should the adder continue as proposed by the staff initially, or should it be paid in using public power benefit funds? And I think that's where we are today.
And maybe throw up the three recommendations by staff at our last meeting.
While she's doing that, I think the only thing that I would clarify is the total amount of the capital program was 1.6.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. As we know it now.
Okay. And does that take into account inflation? Going to be drilled in 3 years?
I think so? It was, I might look to Heather if it included the estimates at the time the capital work was going to begin. Yeah.
So just to review what staff recommended, Heather, could you?
Do you have the record?
Or did you guys come down to, what was your recommendation?
Keep going. Right there, yeah.
Good morning. Staff did have a recommendation to utilize a portion of public charter benefit funding, that portion to be submitted by the board at a later date for that funding to go into effect aligned with the capital construction plan, which is anticipated to begin more in the 2026 or 2027 timeframe. And Rebecca had it up there. There was different funding level options for the board to consider for how much could be allocated from the public car benefit funding and what those impacts would have on a potential rate adder. And it could be anywhere between $1.6 million, which was the full anticipated gap for that construction funding. We also proposed that that would allow for timing for the staff to pursue grant opportunities to see if we could secure some grant funding to help defray the cost of that capital construction.
Right.
So, as I said, this, I didn't realize we were going to have this discussion, and which is okay. But I'm still wondering if the discussion at this moment in time is still a little bit premature, and let me expound on why. Gary, you're correct. We were a different board that made the original decision as to the side boards that would guide our decision. We're now a different board, and one of the things that I'm wondering out loud is if the time is appropriate to really attempt to arrive at a decision point before we go through our strategic visioning process about how we organize ourselves as a utility. Part of the structure of our utility for the last many years has been we've had business lines, we've had the electric component, we've had the water component, the wastewater component, the fiber component. We have not operated as what I like to call an integrated utility. And until we decide what that's going to look like going forward, I'm just asking the question, is this the time to have this discussion? I really am.
So maybe a question, Heather or Kirk, if we, so what are the pros and cons of putting this off? Looking at grant dollars, having further discussion on integrated utility. On one hand, I can see where the folks in Peshastin and our staff would like to have an answer from us, which would be helpful. On the other hand, I think it's appropriate. This really goes into a bigger issue of integration and what we're going to do in the future. And maybe, as I listened to the commissioner, Andy talked about taking the time to have those discussions might be beneficial. What are the ramifications for putting that decision on?
Do you want to start, Heather, and I can chime in?
Sure.
I think you nailed the head. One of the biggest cons of not being able to sit in town is uncertainty for the community. If the transaction is proceeding and the move is going to occur here in the very first term, I think that the customers and residents would appreciate some certainty around what they should be expecting down the road. I think that's probably the biggest con of not having firm decisions now. For staff, it does make it a little bit more challenging for kind of forecasting the individual business line financials to be able to share good information with the board and the public. But that's something that the forecast
all the time, and we can certainly, you know, explain and have conversations about what those forecasts do. So it makes it a bit more challenging, but not too onerous. I think the uncertainty component is the biggest con. Some of the pros of waiting longer are certainly giving us more time to look into grant funding opportunities and giving the board more time to consider what the future looks like, at least for the next near term meeting, longer potentially, that one utility integrated view of the different services and maybe other consideration at this current time.
And I might add, that was great, Heather. I just maybe one additional point would be, depending on the decision that's made, because we had some of the options, not only the options of how much money would go towards the adder and the public power benefit program potentially, there is also the timing with which if there was an adder, when it would go in place. And so depending on the decision that is made here, if the decision is to potentially start the adder sooner rather than later, then there's lost time in collecting the revenues necessary if that decision is made in that regard. That'd be another element, but I think Heather pretty much nailed the pros and cons.
Eric.
So the impact, if we put this off to the residents, could be a shock. If it was decided at some time in the future that there would be an adder, any amount of adder.
I think that's probably the biggest con for you to be aware of.
And I would think that depending upon how the larger issue of strategic planning went and integrated utility, there are many, many projects that would all be blended. So this could just be one more project blended. It doesn't have to be a holdout or a standout project. If we as a board could agree on some type of adder, and to make it easy, instead of a dollar amount, it's always working in dollar amount quite difficult, but working in percentages would make it maybe an easier number to grasp if there was going to be some percentage of a public power benefit that used, and then that would allow staff to have something to hang a hat on and also go out and look for grants that could further shrink the impact of the community. That sound logical, Heather?
Yes, that's doable.
Okay, great.
So with that said, I think maybe what we're talking about here is the decision to postpone the adder for the 3-year period. While it gives us time. I mean, so the public has been informed that there's the possibility of a certain dollar adder for both residential and industrial and businesses. So they know that's out there. By us making a decision not to start that now instead of later, it gives us the time to fully vet the questions that commissioners or comments that commissioners have stated here and continue to work forward and see how much we can reduce that adder or completely eliminate it in the future. Is that a decision that... So would we need to make that decision, or can we just make the statement that we're going to not start the adder right away, we're going to continue?
I would be inclined to say a motion would be helpful.
But not today.
And it's up to you all the time.
Yeah, that, in my book, with that, a motion today wouldn't be in order. Okay. I would protest.
Would you like this on next meetings?
If we wanted to put it there, that'd be fine. Yeah, but this, you know, I'm wanting Commissioner 5.
So I just wanted to key this up as a discussion item for us to keep discussing. I wasn't expecting a vote, so I'm just looking for direction on what the commission would like to do. Okay, there, yeah.
I would like, if it was with me. I would like to see some instruction given to the community. I don't want the community to have 3 years in limbo and not know what is going, what the impact might be. Even if we picked an amount, that amount could be shrunk dramatically based on grants. And if we don't implement that amount, then the community is joyous because we picked an amount and we found grants to fulfill that, and now we're not going to charge that. On the other hand, if we don't find enough grants to fulfill that, then the community has been notified and they are aware, and they can make preparations financially for the implementation of that financial charge. I don't think we would be doing our jobs that we have been elected to do as commissioners if we don't provide this community with some guidance. We can't simply say 3 years from now, we'll tell you whether or not it doesn't matter. Especially when you're talking about $1.6 million to a community that's a big dollar amount. I feel strongly that we need to give them guidance. Don't implement it, that's fine. We can put it off for 3 years, but give them guidance.
We may ultimately, if we do this before we go through our strategic visioning, we may end up with a lack of unanimity in our guidance. Mm-hmm. Very, very possibly a lack of unanimity. I would say quite probably.
Okay, so I think that gives us a little direction to keep working towards the future. Thank you. Okay, manager items.
Okay, got three items. I'd like to invite Vicki Griffin up, and Vicki and Daniel, we're gonna just give us an update on the due diligence with the proposed Raven Wing property purchase. Thanks, Heather.
Let me just share this real quick.
We've been a few times talking about the Raven Wing Ranch property. We're giving another update. We've been through the due diligence process. We've done an initial cultural review, a phase one environmental assessment, mineral rights review, and a kind of review. The cultural phase one assessment and the title review all came back with nothing that needed to get attention about that was showstopper for the districts. The mineral rights review was just a little bit more information about what the mineral rights in the property were. So Doreen is, as far as we can tell, all of the mineral rights belongs to the property in green. In yellow is all rights. 50% were retained back in 1850, and they've been exchanged a few times since then.
Vicki, what was the yellow percentage? I didn't hear it.
50%. Yeah. And then the red is there are no mineral rights associated with those parcels. So they've been, that those were owned by the state, and the state typically retains those rights when they sell the property. So all the mineral rights were retained by the state on those three red parcels. And then Daniel has a little bit of information on the next steps.
Yes, thank you, Vicki. So we are approaching the end of the initial 90-day due diligence period, which ends March 13th. And we have, of course, the ability to extend that for up to three additional 30-day periods. At this point, there does not appear to be anything that we've uncovered thus far that we would want to study further. And so then the choice would be to either proceed directly to purchase, which we have to do within 60 days of the end of the due diligence period, or of course there is the choice to withdraw since we're still in the due diligence period. But given what we've discovered so far, or not discovered, I should say perhaps more appropriately, there doesn't seem to be any reason not to continue.
I'm curious, how does 50% mineral rights work? I previous owner said I want half, I want to keep. Well, how does that work?
The owner back, I believe, in the late 50s, when he sold the property, retained a 50% interest in the mineral rights in that deed. So it's one of the bundle of rights, and you can retain whatever percentage, I suppose, you want to.
Thank you.
Explain more about that, what that entails as far as the rights. There's lots of different things. There's easements involved, there's rights to construct buildings and all sorts of things. For those mineral rights, do they have those rights as well? For easements, and what does that entail?
Daniel.
Sure, happy to. Commissioner, it's a good question. The deeds themselves are not a model of clarity in terms of what they had. It just says minerals. There's a potentially a range of interpretations here, whether that's liquid minerals such as oil or gas, or whether that's actual hard minerals. But I think that, you know, what we can say is that the owners of these mineral rights would have the right to come onto the property and to access those minerals. From what we understand is that they would have the right to do so irrespective of what use the surface rights have been made, that they could do so even potentially damaging those any right uses that those surface rights have been put to, and extract the minerals to which they are entitled. Clearly, as Vicky mentioned, this is one of those sticks in the bundle of sticks that make up real property rights. And there are a couple of ways that the commission could go about this. One thing we could try to do is track down the owner and ask him if they want to sell the mineral rights to us, and we can buy them, and then we own the whole thing. We can do nothing. That's another possibility. Another possibility is these are property rights, just like most others, and the district has the right to condemn. So if that ever became an issue, that certainly is also on the table.
How would they, in fact, let's say some of this property was set aside for wildlife mitigation, those kinds of things. How would the mineral rights, who would supersede in that? Something that we did for wildlife that supersede the mineral right obligation, right to come onto the property and construct and build roads?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I don't know that we, mineral rights are property rights, just right. Like any other property rights, so we don't have the ability just to try to undo them, so to speak.
No, that's right. But if it's used as mitigation,
absolutely.
How does that to collide?
Right. And so I think what it would do is, it's not enough just to have the right, you would need to get a permit to actually get in there and extract these minerals. So you'd have to go through a CEPA process, and there'd be a lot of steps that would have to happen. And so, to your point, if there was some kind of dedication of a use, that would, I think, it would enter that calculus as we're going through in terms of that. And we wouldn't be the permitting agency, but a permitting agency would be looking at all of that and determining whether to get the permits that would be necessary even to get in and extract these minerals. So it's far from a foregone conclusion as to what that would be. I think it would. And so you would just have to, look at all of those facts with the laws at the time. Back in the 50s, I think it was probably a little easier to extract things. That was before CEPA, that was before NEPA, that was before all of the current environmental laws that you really have today to contend with. So it is a more complex picture these days.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So we aren't really here to ask for any information today, other than maybe guidance as to that.
Here's anything further for Sam?
So is there a reason to extend the due diligence, in your opinion? Staff has not identified anything at this point that any additional things that we could do that we're aware of at this point.
that said when it's our deadline for a decision?
March 13th is the end of the 90 days. We can notify the property owner before that time if we wanted to. We decided we did not want to purchase. If we don't notify them, then it would just move into a closing. We'd have to physically notify them that we did not want to proceed with the sale. We would want to notify them immediately. So if we wanted out of this because of this mineral right issue, today would really be the day. That's correct.
Extension.
Correct, for more time, if we wanted to pay for that, yeah. Yeah.
That applies to the contract. We execute on the contract and it's not
correct.
Lost.
Gary?
Thank you. Just, I probably missed this, but the due diligence, which has been completed so far, the four items on the list, all the satisfaction of staff.
Yes.
Yep.
I just want to make sure I answered correctly on your question about the extension would be gone after the March 13th date, the ability to extend. Is that the question you're asking?
Oh, just, you know, we have supposed to.
Yeah, to extend it. Yeah.
Well, personally, I'm. I think the question fine. Where are these risks as they are stated? I think it's minimal. Mineral, right? Mineral. It is minimal, and I think this is something we need to move forward on, and with the purchase of it. And I don't know how the other commissioners are as far as their comfort zone. But we've looked at it and we've looked at it again, and thank you.
That's the plan, unless we were here otherwise today. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. And Daniel. Okay, I'd like to invite Heather F. with a rating agency update. Welcome back.
Thank you. Just providing a brief update this morning about some recent action from one of our credit rating agencies. 2 weeks ago, Dan Lagarde, our CFO, CRO, Mark Mullins, our Director of Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics, and myself met virtually with the trades. As part of their periodic review of our credit quality. Something that all of our rating agencies do on a schedule that they drive. Some agencies like to have updates every couple of years, some every 3 years, just depends on their internal processes, but it was time to talk to Fitch again. And we provided updates around our operational condition, our financial condition, and highlighted some key risks, both for the district and also just as the industry as a whole, kind of hot topics, things that are going on. And that was a really productive conversation. We had some back and forth and some questions. We're able to provide information to Fitch to help them complete that review, and I'm happy to report the outcome was excellent. We did receive an affirmation of our AA+ credit rating with a stable outlook that continues to place the district among the top rated public power entities in the nation. We are anticipating we will have a review likely from Moody's as part of their periodic review process also this year in 2024. So hopefully we'll be back with some additional information from that later this year. And we're anticipating the public have a review that's going to be next year in 2025. We have a little bit different review cycle. Did want to share just a couple of the key highlights that Fitch pointed out about district operations, which included our valuable hydro generating resource portfolio. Those being clean, green, and continuing to increase in value. Our exceptionally low cost ability to produce power through those hydro assets.
as well as they truly value the flexibility that the district has with local control and rate setting. That is a very highly desirable characteristic for a local board to have complete control over that rate setting process. They also pointed out our robust power sales hedging strategies and our ability to sell and secure our power through contracts that mitigate both price and hydro variability risk and our ability to manage that counterparty credit risk also. And the last thing that they pointed out as a key highlight is the proactive leveraging of above budget margins to not only retire and reduce our debt burden, but also prepare for our large capital programs and investment programs that we have going currently. Overall, it was what I would call probably a glowing review. I don't know that we could ever hope to achieve anything better. Often we are asked, well, are we going to ever get that AAA rating? So just for context, both S&P and Fitch rate the district as AA plus, and they S&P and Fitch also rate the U.S. federal government as AA plus. So I would argue it's highly unlikely that we would ever advance beyond this outlook. Well, we get to be the ones to share the good news with our rating agencies and then be able to report that back to our commission and public. All of these results are driven by everyone's day-to-day efforts here. Our ability to generate low-cost power, our ability to keep operations going, execute on capital projects, be creative and innovative in our thinking and approach, that's all everybody here at the organization contributing to that. Any questions?
Fantastic. One comment. Extreme setting sessions and evaluation. And one of the things that I came away with was that, number one, they let me back on the plane. It was important. But the fact that we would come with a proposal and they say, well, yeah, that looks good, but what about this? And then we have to go back and prove something else. And then it was, well, okay, you did that. Well, what about this? And it was basically, an onion, peeling back an onion. What about this? What about that? Basically, you get there, and it takes a real long time for someone like Fitz to have the confidence to give this kind of a raise. I mean, this is really something big. And it's not done overnight. It takes literally decades to achieve those goals, and of course it's everyone rowing in the boat, everybody pulling, and you guys have got a very the comments, Commissioner. I agree.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Now I know about the AAA because
I can see the question.
I stand in awe of our staff, everyone that has contributed to this rating. It is not something that anyone should take lightly. This is a lot of work on everyone's part. Several years ago, when the rating agencies were called to the carpet because several companies had high ratings by the agencies, and they ended up defaulting on some of their debt. And so the government stepped in and said, you guys were asleep at the switch. So at that time, they really turned the screws on getting top-notch ratings. And so it is extremely difficult. I've been involved in bonds and bond ratings my entire working career, so I'm very familiar with how difficult it is to get the rating that we have. I'm very proud of all of our staff. And also my fellow commissioners for being prudent and fiscally responsible in their spending so that we can do the things that you just mentioned, to pay for out of cash the rebuilding and refurbishment of our hydro, which are not inexpensive to do. There's still many great costs ahead of us that we're staring at. And I have great confidence that we will get there and continue to maintain that rate. So wonderful job. Just want to really give everyone a congratulations on that. Everybody should give themselves a pat on the back. Good job.
Thank you, Heather. Great comments, commissioners. Congratulations.
Thanks, Heather. And last of my items, I'd like to invite John Stoll and Ian Fitzgerald up to give an update on our billing challenges.
Mark Commissioners, John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. I'll turn this over to Ian, who will talk more about the event itself. Then I'll come back to me and just talk about what we're doing to work through the issue.
Morning, Commissioners. Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer. So many of you are aware and you've heard in the news, Change Healthcare is an organization that has about 100 services that serve the majority of the health industry. But they also have services that provide billing services to organizations like ourselves. On February 21st, Change Healthcare was attacked by a ransomware company called Black Cat. This group is a known organization just to actually extract money from organizations and hold them ransom. They're the same organization that actually attacked Caesar and MGM last year. And so these type of attacks generally take about 21 days on average to resolve. This is a bigger attack than anybody has seen, and it's a different attack vector than people have seen in the past. We're now on day 13. Their CEO came out and they held ISAC on Thursday and said they were still weeks away from recovering their services. At this point, there has been no time frame, and no one is actually estimating a time frame to restore their services. As such, actually on day two, we decided and recognized that this was a large problem. This was an issue for our customers to get bills out to them, and we actually started developing a workaround in-house to get bill payments out to our customers as quickly as possible. We're now at a point that we can safely say that tomorrow we will begin that process of actually sending bills out to our customers. It will still take some time to actually get those bills to the customers with print in the mail time, but we will actually begin that process tomorrow. So with that, John can then talk about communications that we've had.
Sure, thanks, Ian. As Ian mentioned, this has been publicly noted. We've worked through an approach to communicate with our customers. We've had a press release. We put stuff on our website. We are sending out an individual letter to each customer. It should be completed today and out, and that will go out as well in advance of those customers, all our customers getting these bills. As Ian stated, we're day 13. We roughly generate about 2,000 bills a day. So we'll have some catch up. We'll probably try and batch these and get caught up to work with our customers and get those bills in their hands. They will look a little bit different. We're just trying to get enough information so our customers have it and we can start accepting payments. Our customer relations staff, they've done a good job on the phones. You know, there's a lot going on. It hasn't been overwhelming, but customers do have questions. One of the things right now, it's tax season. So people who need their utility bills for their tax purposes, they have questions and we're able to give them that information. So it's something they're working through on a daily basis. And I know they appreciate the support and look forward to getting back to normal operations, but just understanding what we're in right now.
John, customers that are used to getting automatic payments or e-bills, what's the difference for
them? Right now, we are just going with a print statement only. We are working to develop to get the capability back, so once the bills go out, it can trigger auto payments. That's a pretty popular customer choice where, you know, you're on auto pay and every month when your bill is due, it goes and processes the payment. You will get that back up online as well. There's nothing stopping customers from making payments. I'm a pretty good example. I know what I owe every month, and I just use my banker system and do that payment just without even thinking about it. Frankly, I don't even look at the bill because I know what it's going to be. So there's a number of payment channels, and we want to make sure we get those back up and available for all our customers and their preferences.
So did you say the auto payment would not be functional for a while or immediate? It is.
We're shooting for when the bills start going out and having that functionality back up as well.
Yeah, that'd be tomorrow.
You are starting to develop a process to do that. It's a timing of actually getting that turned on by another vendor that we use. But yes, the goal is to get them on as quick as possible, as near the same time as possible. If you can achieve that, that's great.
There's a lot of, your team's working really hard. We're trying to think through all the issues. Billing dates is a good example. You know, so we have grace for our customers to extend out their billing dates, given the pause and the interruption we're in right now.
John, is there a procedure that has been developed for bills that fall through the cracks and might be beyond the payment date so that there's no penalty to the customers during this time period?
You know, it's something, you know, the board has always supported. We always work with our customers. If somebody's had an unusual circumstance or something, you know, we always have the capability to be flexible and understand what their circumstances are.
Great. Thank you.
Also, after that, we are changing due dates. So the due dates that we're doing a week and a half ago, those bills are going to change as to when the bill goes out plus the time that we normally allow to be paid. So we are reflecting that change.
There's a lot of snowbirds that I know that spend the winter down south in Arizona, and they will not be coming home until middle of April. And so in the event that there's something in the mail being mailed to Arizona because they have mail forwarding, and I mean, I could just see a couple of problems there. So I just wanted to throw that out.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
We are also going to be sending bills to people who have emails on record with us. So for those reasons that we recommended that we want them quicker in a different format. And if we have that capability with the email, we will provide that information to them.
Gentlemen, thank you for the invitation.
Thank you.
Thanks. And thanks to the entire team. I know there was several working over the weekend trying to get this bill out. So a lot of hard work. Okay, that's all the manager items I have.
Thank you. Lisa?
Yeah, thanks.
Good morning. You had some travel related emails from some of you from Friday that have gone to you, some of your expense reports. So I will get back to you on those. Your haircut. Thanks. It's my 50-year-old girl pick. Something had to change. Okay. So March 11 meetings coming up, they're Zoom online, 13th through the 15th. There's no online registration even, so I think those all got from their calendars by Rebecca. The March 28th Wakuda water meeting. I think only Commissioner Smith is attending now. Canceling for Commissioner Allen.
Going to be an in-person or a Zoom on?
Looks like it's both. I do have a room held for you, which we will need to update. I haven't seen the agenda or times, so I'm not sure if you want to go the day before or stay the night. So we'll just keep in touch about that. The Wakuda annual conference is at this Media Lodge. I have rooms for everyone held from the 16th to the 19th. Let me know if you change your plans, if you plan not to go, if you want your dates updated. I'm still also watching for registration on that. I haven't seen that available yet.
Let's go back. 28th, like, Zoom meeting.
Yes.
Did you put that in there?
Yes.
I'm sure you said it
was.
Anyway.
It's available via Zoom, and I canceled your room previously and noted that despite my Zoom. Paper. No, that's fine. In May, we have NWPPA annual conference in Salt Lake City.
Take me up also.
Okay. So that links us with Commissioners Allen and Arsenault. me know if you change your mind or you want your dates changed, your original dates, and I'll work for the registration for that as well. APPA Annual Conference in San Diego, June 7th to 12th. I have rooms for everyone except Commissioner Berggren. Nights the 6th through the 13th. And Commissioner Smith is the voting delegate. Then I'll mark when I complete the registration. So again, just let me know.
Do you have to be registered for the policymakers, there's going to be a meeting.
So I saw your message and they said they were going to send something out after the meeting. You just made your come.
Okay.
So that's what we.
If I see it, I'll send it forward to you if I see.
Okay. I did. I think I added it to this after it was sent out.
Yes. Yeah. Saturday.
In the Saturday of the whole APPA cycle is when he'll be meeting.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 That's
the day of giving.
That's on Friday.
As well. So that's a separate registration. You want to do that. Again, the Water Committee, it's like, be available by Zoom and also in person.
So I'll do Zoom.
You can probably down for Zoom as well. Thank you.
The rest of you want me to hold a room just in case?
Or for 27?
No room.
Just in case.
Okay. So I'll, not knowing the agenda,
right,
hold it the 26th to the 28th. Commissioner Arsenault, you too?
Yes.
You're busy?
No, that's fine. I will do that. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, it looks like that's everything I have rooms held for. Second. So I added the Summer Fly-In July 23rd. Is that a different event?
That's a different.
Okay. Okay. I have Commissioner Allen attending the annual summit in Whistler, July 21 to 25.
And I will keep you updated. When the agenda opens, if there's nothing pertinent.
Okay. Okay.
More. Pacific Northwest Economic Region. And so last year I went in Boise and there were city council members, mayors, board districts, transportation. You had consulate from up in Canada, Homeland Security. There, it was an overwhelming experience for me, but it became very, oh, and lots of elections from our state, you know, so it's Washington, California, Montana, Idaho, and it was fascinating watching all of this pre-session work happening amongst them. So I do think it's worth attending, just depending on the agenda. Thank you.
July, we'll put a meeting, not have a location yet.
July, sorry, let me get there. 17 through 19.
Right.
I have to be determined. I can double check on that. I haven't had things open or noted, like the agendas and everything, for registration open until it gets a lot closer, but I will watch for that. Hey, you and I.
Thank you. Thanks for everything.
You all set?
Yeah, that's good. Okay, commission items.
We have some special meetings scheduled that we need to approve. Do I have a motion on those three meetings? Following the special meetings?
I move to approve those special meetings as stated or as presented.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Passes. Delegation of action items from prior board meetings.
Got an update on a few of them here, just from prior board meetings. We had one for Ian Fitzgerald to bring back information on the total resource management contract for Maximo Prime subscription services. And he sent an email on February 21st to cover that one. And then we had three from a prior workshop regarding the Leavenworth and Chelan offices. That was for me to determine if customer satisfaction survey data includes information specific to Leavenworth and Chelan. Sent that on February 21st, which it did not. And then to ask staff to consider a question for the next customer satisfaction survey seeking feedback on satisfaction by Leavenworth and Chelan area customers. And that was also done on February 21st. And then for me to follow up with staff to make themselves available for you all for information provided regarding the Chelan and Leavenworth offices. And that was done by Don Stoll and Andy Wendell. And then on February 20th board meeting, the last board meeting, we had a follow-up action item for staff to add the information on the resource adequacy planning reserve margin to the quarterly energy resources reports. And then Dave Nelson to provide information on the largest capital expenditure year, which he sent by email on February 22nd. And Commissioner Allen had a follow-up question about inflation adjusted up dollars, and he followed up with that as well.
And boy, did he.
Yeah,
that was a great follow up.
Yeah.
So thank you.
And then no new action items from today.
Great. Okay, at this time, I don't see any public here, but a lot of the questions. Do we have any additional public comments? Hearing none, do we have any matters of general business that haven't necessarily come before the commission today? Okay, hearing none, we'll move into, we'll recess for executive session to discuss with legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigations, potential litigations to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by statute for 45 minutes.
I think you're done in 30, so.
This is Rebecca Newman, clerk of the board. The commissioners have ended their executive session at 12:30 p.m. where no decisions were made and no votes were taken. There being no further business, the meeting is adjourned.